Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
I'm ready to blow it just one more sound.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbisn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Hello everyone, this is Doran Rosenfeld, and I have a guest here who's got all sorts of interesting things to talk about, because she looks at the body starting with the feet, and going up from there. And I would just read the introduction I wrote for her. Dr. Emily Sleeple is a functional podiatrist and human movement specialist. She believes that the feet are the core of the body, creating a physical grounding from which our mental and emotional awareness are then produced. For over 20 years, she has studied postural alignment and human movement. She teaches that our feet are the gateway into the nervous system. During her career, Dr. Splickle has founded EBFA Global, created the Barefoot Training Specialist Certification, authored Barefoot Strong, and has founded the website The Boso Technology. All of these projects are based on the idea that the feet are responsible for a great deal of the sensory awareness of our body. She will talk about how strokes and other breakdowns between the body and the brain can harm this connection. But there's always a way to repair our core. We'll talk about that, but first, I think we should talk about why the feet are so important to everything about us as people.
Yes, hi. Thank you for having me on the show, Doran, and to all the listeners, that I am on a mission to help people better understand the power of their feet from a sensory perspective. And our feet are so important because when you think of the fact that the only contact point between our body and the ground are our feet, but it's more specifically the skin in the bottom of the feet. And that skin and our feet as a structure really sets the tone or the foundation to our posture, our alignment, our dynamic balance, stabilization, really how we orientate ourselves to gravity, our body, and the ground.
Very interesting. So you're saying that the skin at the very bottom of our feet is what's so important.
Yes, so the skin in the bottom of the feet is very unique from any other part of the skin on our body outside of the palm of our hand. So those two areas of the body, palm of hand, bottom of the feet, very special, very unique skin with unique nerves and nerve endings. And these nerve endings are called tactile. So they're mechanoreceptors or tactile receptors that are constantly reading the stimuli of touch-based experiences. Let's say, for example, if you're holding an object, for me to hold a glass of water and still have a conversation and be thinking of what I'm going to do, you know, in the next hour is a very sophisticated process to not drop the glass of water. That's based off of all of the subtle, unique nerve endings in the hand that are constantly reading the environment. Same thing when we stand on our feet and we stand in one place, which is called quiet stance. There are nerve endings in the bottom of the feet that are constantly sensing pressure shifts and skin stretch and texture, which we'll go into about Neboso. And there's this auto-adjustment and auto-correction that is happening every moment that we are on our feet, whether we're standing or we're moving. And that's really what my practice is built around, is optimizing understanding and accessing those nerves.
Very interesting. So, at different times in your life then, you have different sensations coming from those nerves at the bottom of your feet.
So, yes, depending on your activity, you are accessing these different sensations. And really, what's interesting and why I love the nervous system so much is because of how the body or the purpose of the nervous system is to move. And you can think of, you know, when a baby is first born and their nervous system is still developing, really a lot of the development of that nervous system is built around ultimately them moving. So a lot of their milestones are movement-based milestones, right? We are, you know, here on this planet to move. So understanding how we control that movement through sensory input is very important. And there's four main input systems on how we control movement through our nervous system. That's our eyes, our inner ear, which is the vestibular system, our joints and joint receptors that sense stretch of that joint, so the joint capsules and muscle tendons and things like that, and then the skin on the bottom of the feet. Now, based off of how you want to optimize movement, you can access those different input systems to do rehab, to optimize performance, to ensure a child is setting their motor system appropriately for seniors. So it's really powerful once you understand the uniqueness of those four input systems. And the one that I particularly specialize in, partly because of being podiatry, is going to be the tactile system.
Okay. That's interesting because I'm sure you get this question a lot, but what about in the case of diabetes where you can't necessarily feel the bottom of the feet?
Yeah, that's one of the best examples of how to understand really how important the nerves in the bottom of our feet are. So in a individual that has diabetes and diabetic peripheral neuropathy, this is a sensory loss of the starting at the foot. And when you have a diabetic who has neuropathy and sensory loss of their feet, their fall risk is 15 times greater than someone same age with diabetes but doesn't have neuropathy. So that demonstrates the connection between losing sensation of the feet and fall risk. Now, there's many types of neuropathy. Diabetes is probably the most common, but any type of neuropathy from chemo-induced to MS-related to small nerve to autoimmune to idiopathic, you will see a decreased connection to the foot-ground relationship. You will see this disconnect between foot/body awareness, and then that translates to decreased balance and stabilization when they're standing and moving. And what's really important is it contributes to a fear of falling or a what's called movement, a lack of movement confidence. And if you do not feel confident on how you move, that in itself is a great fall risk contributor. So a lot of the work that I do, both in my practice and with Novoso, is to try to build movement confidence by helping people feel their feet again.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So tell us a little bit about how you get the feet working again the way they're supposed to work.
Yeah, so there's several ways that you can do this. So to understand how to feel the feet, optimize the feet, upregulate, or what I call, I'm quoting it, but I say tuning into the feet. So I want you to tune into your foot or tune into your body. Now, there's four/five main stimuli that the feet are sensitive to, and that is pressure. So if you massage the bottom of your feet, you maybe stand on a pebble path or stand on like a golf ball or something, you're essentially bringing pressure into the nerves in the bottom of the feet. That will upregulate your ability to connect to the foot. Another stimuli is skin stretch. So if you've ever seen any like athletic tape, and how tape on skin is essentially stimulating skin stretch, that builds foot/joint awareness. So that's another way. Texture is a really powerful one, and that's what Novoso is. So Novoso is a textured product line. It's insoles, mats, flooring, and release balls. And the unique texture pattern stimulates the nerves in the bottom of the feet. So that's a way. And then the final one is vibration. So if you've ever heard of whole body vibration, so there's vibration platforms that you can stand on or put your feet on, and the vibration wakes up the nerves in the feet. Now, regardless of the stimulus that you bring in, texture, vibration, pressure, skin stretch, when you stimulate the nerves in the feet, you stimulate the muscles of the feet. And we are trying to get the small muscles of the feet to become stronger, because that's part of how you maintain your balance. That's part of how you create your posture. So for healthy feet or healthy posture, you want to have strong, small muscles of the feet. They're called intrinsics, so small intrinsics of the feet. So I do that through sensory stimulation, through barefoot movement, through actual intentional foot exercises, and then integrating that into the rest of your body awareness exercises, like balance exercises and breath work and deep core work, is really powerful to movement.
Yes, I know that much. Yeah, because, I mean, when I first had my accident, they were working on me kind of crawling back and forth across the floor just so I could become aware of my arms and legs were in relation to each other.
Yeah, everything in a, whether you're rehabbing from an injury or trying to optimize performance in an athlete, or you had a stroke, or you have MS or neuropathy, everything is built around your perception of your body and then your perception of your body in relation to gravity. And you started on the ground crawling, which is taking or changing the relationship with gravity. As soon as you stand up, that's a sudden challenge to the nervous system to orientate itself in gravity. And that's one of the most important things. Vestibular issues is a shift in your ability to relate to gravity. And I'm so fascinated in this topic. And to understand it even more, I read a lot of research on astronauts because they are in a anti-gravitational field, and it helps you to understand how the body relates to that. And when they come back to Earth after a mission and they're in this gravitational field that we are all in every day, it's interesting to see where they start to get their deficits. A lot of them actually come back with a lot of foot pain. And we actually worked with, and I was surprised. And then I was approached by NASA, and they use Nervosa with the astronauts because of the fact that they're getting foot pain. And it makes sense because they're not on the ground and they're not getting foot sensory stimulation. They don't feel body weight. They don't get vibration. Their muscles are not contracting in their feet. And it leads to a lot of issues when they come back.
Very interesting. Yeah, so what about someone who's, like, for example, sitting, someone with, you know, like MS you were talking about, when you're not able to have the balance to walk around, so you're seated all the time. How important are the bottoms of your feet in cases like that?
Yes, so you do want to understand how you could bring in sensory stimulation without actually ambulating. And this is why I like vibration platforms, because whole body vibration platforms, an example of one is called Power Plate, and they have a small one, think the size of like an exercise step, if anyone is familiar with step classes. And if you just put your feet on the whole body vibration platform, it is mimicking the vibrational forces of walking, so the ground reaction forces. And ground reaction forces, when we walk and do dynamic movement, stimulates your nervous system, helps the muscles to contract, reinforces circulation, builds bone density, increases blood flow to the brain. So all this like really powerful stuff. But you get that benefit just by putting your feet on the whole body vibration platform. So that's a way for someone who is maybe not fully ambulatory or is not able to take as many steps as they used to because of an injury or a condition, that they can still get some of that powerful benefit.
Very interesting. Very interesting. So I guess something similar is what happens in the case of strokes.
Yes. So in the case of stroke, same thing, right? Oftentimes we're dealing with maybe one side of the body that isn't feeling the same as the other side, right? Maybe there's some weakness or foot drop or numbness that you now have to reorientate the nervous system to stay connected to that side of the body, to both sides. And, you know, this is where I'm a huge advocate of barefoot rehab and barefoot exercises for people who are post-stroke. And, you know, I teach a lot of therapists and professionals who do the rehab for those who had a stroke. So it's versus just me doing it. I train the therapist and then they do it. And a lot of the feedback and stories that I hear from therapists who tell me that as soon as they integrated barefoot therapy techniques into their protocols, they've seen a much faster recovery in their stroke patients or their stroke clients. Now, just being barefoot and doing barefoot exercises is step one, release the feet. And the other techniques, the vibration and the Nervosa and all of that stuff. But why you want to integrate foot-specific components to stroke rehab is, again, that's your foundation. That's your balance point. If you don't feel the ground easily on both sides of your body, both feet, it's going to affect your balance. And, you know, it really is so powerful from the stories I hear. And, you know, for the listeners who are maybe curious and haven't explored accessing the foot, I encourage you to. The more you stay in shoes and create this sensory disconnect, so, you know, the thicker the shoe, the more structured the shoe, you kind of disconnect the foot from the rest of the nervous system.
Uh-huh.
And it's really powerful when you start to get out of that.
Very interesting, because people are kind of taught that the thick sole is better.
Yes, and a lot of people get, there's this misconception that if you are scared that someone's going to fall or has less stability, then you want to try to quote unquote stabilize the foot and give them a thicker structured shoe just to kind of, think that that's going to give support, but it actually doesn't. There's no research that validates that. It's just an archaic belief system that I start challenging. And a lot of my colleagues in podiatry have said for years the same thing, that I have an older client or someone with neuropathy or someone who had a stroke, and I need to support that patient through a structured shoe. And it just doesn't contribute to it. The person then moves like their feet are blocks, like this block is a unit versus all of the dexterity and sensory that the foot actually has. I am here to challenge that belief.
So you think walking around barefoot is a good thing?
I do. Now, there's exceptions to everything. Now, let's say some of the listeners had a stroke and have foot drop. When you have foot drop, if you were told because of the degree of the foot drop to be in an AFO or some sort of brace, then to be barefoot, how do we balance this? Is there a way that we could meet in the middle and bring more sensory information to your foot, but still have you in the AFO that is necessary to have a more balanced gait? Right? And that's why I created Neboso. Or for you, before you put on your AFO, release your feet, or if you are in a situation, have someone massage your feet, release your feet, roll your feet, and then go into your AFO and or into your orthotics or into your shoes. So there's a way to still meet in the middle for a lot of these things.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So I just remember after my injury, I was told to get myself a balance board, and just when I'm sitting in my chair, put my feet on it and just try to get used to the sensation on my feet, even though I couldn't walk at the time.
Yep, that's great. That's great. It's putting your joints into different positions, which when you move a joint and you flex it and you extend it and all of the movements that your ankle could do or your shoulder does, you are talking to the nervous system. So you were doing that. As you were doing that, that's a form. I would consider that a form of brain training. You were just saying, hello, brain. Hello, nervous system. I'm now plantar flexing. I'm dorsiflexing. And, I mean, as much as people would be like, this is not going to do anything, it does stuff to the nervous system, right? Especially immediately after an injury, it is effective.
Very interesting. Yes, and I have 3 or 4 balance boards around the house here. I'm thinking of getting one and just, you know, while having this conversation, just kind of put my feet over it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that can be used any time that you don't need to have extremely fantastic balance to be able to do that while you're sitting in a chair.
Right. Right.
So what can people do about, you were saying, the texture of the skin between the foot and the ground? What can people do to help that texture? of that skin.
So, yeah, so it's one of the inputs, sensory input or stimuli that the foot is sensitive to, is texture. Now, really what this is, and I don't want to make it too complicated, but what texture really is to the nervous system is what's called two-point discrimination. So the best analogy that I can give you is going to be Braille. So when you think of Braille and look at the Braille dots on an ATM or something like that, the way that your finger, which is the same nerves as in your feet, the way that the finger senses the Braille dots and reads them is because of the differentiation of those dots. That's what texture is. So I'm loosely using the word texture. Now, the Nervoso products are really two-point discrimination products. And we have little pyramids across the insoles and the mats and all of our products that are stimulating the Braille nerve. And the Braille nerve is a two-point discrimination nerve. So the more specific that you can be with the stimuli, the better. I will give another example real quick as far as vibration. So vibration is really what ground reaction forces are. So everyone knows that when you walk and you hit the ground with your foot, you get impact forces or ground reaction forces. I'm sure you've heard that term. Ground reaction forces are sensed by the body as vibration. Now, vibration is sound, right? So sound is vibration. That's how you hear things. Sound has frequencies, right? So you can tune a radio, and when you go to a radio station, you are essentially tuning in to a frequency, okay?
Mm-hmm.
In your feet, the nerves in your feet are sensitive to certain frequencies. So you want to, almost like a radio station, like I know exactly which radio station the feet nerves will respond to. And that's where you want to get specific. If I'm on, you know, FM 100.3, my feet might not perceive that frequency. Maybe my quads do or my hips higher up in my body. So that's also part of it. And where it becomes a little bit more, I don't know, I find it fascinating because of that. But the more specific you can be with the stimuli, the better the response.
Okay. Very interesting. So I know, you know, I've watched the same things on Facebook, and I'm sure everyone else has seen the people who are born without hands, so they learn to use their feet as a functional hand. So again, that's just finding the specific nerves and training them, right? That's what you're saying?
Yes. That is also an example of really the neuroplasticity of the brain. And
yeah.
You know, our nervous system, this is a good takeaway for people who have had a brain injury or a neurological injury, is that our nervous system's number one priority or top three priority is to survive. So it will find a way. And that's really the theory of a lot of neuroplasticity, is that new synapses are continuously being made. And if I had an injury in a part of my brain, the brain is very intelligent in adapting and kind of rewiring or bypassing that area of injury to then have another way to achieve the same goal. That's in the case of with the people who don't have hands and they're using the feet. They have maximized and optimized the dexterity and the articulation of the foot because they had to, and the brain favored that. So it is a good example. And I think that anyone who has had a brain injury and then was able to recover and achieve, like, walk again when their doctor said, you'll never walk. Those are other examples of how powerful the brain is in finding ways to achieve the goal that it wants.
Very interesting. Yeah, and so the feet then can be trained just like the muscles or any other part of the body to do something, to do anything, to help us move, help us stay alive.
Yes. And they are very powerful. What's fascinating about muscles in the body, but especially muscles in the feet, is that they connect to other muscles. So they're called co-contractions, or another term is called muscle synergies, which means that my brain and nervous system knows that when I engage one muscle, it's going to trigger another muscle to engage. An example of one is that when I engage the muscle that controls my big toe, that pushes my big toe down, my pelvic floor or my deep core muscles co-contract. And some of the listeners might be, well, that's weird. Why would my toe be connected to my deep core muscles? To me, I'm like, makes sense, because guess what? When you're walking, you have to have connection, and you actually push through your big toe. That's how you take a step. That's how you jump and push away from the ground, is through your toes, your toe strength. So, and then if you think of where you get power in your hips, the power generator of your hips are your glutes. So I want to connect to my core so my glutes can contract. So it makes sense. That's inherent within the nervous system. So the more you can strengthen your feet, you're technically strengthening many other parts of the body without intentionally contracting those muscles.
Hmm. Very interesting. Okay, well then back to my question from before. When people can't really feel the bottom of their feet, is there still a connection between the big toe moving and the core muscles?
Yes, there is. And the way that you know this or can say, no, this is still worth doing it, even though I have, let's say, neuropathy or numbness in my feet. Most neuropathies, a lot of neuropathies, are sensory. They're not motor. So even though I can't feel my feet, the muscles of my feet are still contracting. So mm-hmm. I will tell, you know, patients or therapists who are working with patients that if the patient says, you know, I have neuropathy, I can't feel my feet, why am I doing this? I've kind of given up on my feet. And you really want to say, no, those connections are still there. You can still strengthen the foot. You can still strengthen the feet and the core, even though you can't feel it. It is happening. Trust me, these contractions are happening. And when you have neuropathy, sensory neuropathy, we'll just talk about, there's different types of sensations that are lost. So you might not feel pressure, but you feel texture. You might not feel pain, but you feel temperature, right? So that's also important for people to understand, is that when someone has neuropathy and numbness in their feet, depending on the severity or the type of neuropathy, they still have certain sensations that will pass through into the nervous system. And we have found that with Nivoso, is people will say, I have numbness in my feet, but I can feel your textured insoles. Like, how is that possible? And it's because they're different nerves. They're different nerve endings. And I might have, you know, my A nerve is affected with neuropathy, but my B nerve is still sensitive. You know, I hope that makes sense to the listeners, so that they understand that it is still worth accessing these nerves and strengthening the feet and really paying attention to the foot, because you can start to wake it up and challenge it. And you have peripheral neuroplasticity just as much as you have brain neuroplasticity.
Very interesting. So does it help? I mean, I know it does in some situations when you can't work on one arm, for example, to work on the other arm. And often the sensations will be just as effective. So you could do that with the feet and the sensations too?
Absolutely, absolutely. And there is research demonstrating that if you do work on one side, you will see a contralateral improvement in balance and stabilization with the feet. So I do encourage people to work on both sides when they do have, let's say, a unilateral injury or a unilateral numbness. Is, you know, don't neglect the healthy side, but working the healthy side is actually transferring and enhancing the side that perhaps has the injury on it.
Very interesting. So what does it depend on then to rehab someone from some sort of sensory deficit? I mean, obviously it depends on how severe, how long, that kind of thing, but what else is important when you're talking about rehabbing a specific limb, one of your legs?
Yeah. So let's say that we have, you know, an injury on one side, and you're looking at it from a sensory perspective, is I look primarily at proprioceptive and mechanoceptive. So there's different ways you could focus on it. Is using some sort of weight. Let me actually reword that. How can I increase the gravity perception to that limb, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And gravity perception around our body is really pressure, right? So think of like weighted blankets. Weighted blankets are weights, so they're obviously increasing gravity. Gravity is pressure and weight, and that is very powerful to the nervous system. So to increase pressure or weight, do I want to add a weight, like an ankle weight? That will actually help someone connect to that limb. So I, for a lot of movement disorders that I work with, I will have people use wrist weights or ankle weights. And there's a brand called Bala Bangles, and they make them so they look like jewelry. So it's weighted, but it's jewelry. And it's not like, you know, my mom's ankle weights from the 80s or anything like that. There's something that you could wear out and it wouldn't look medical, let's say.
Right.
You could also, this is more central, it's less limb, but you can wear a weighted vest. Same thing. There's companies out there that have weighted vests or add weight kind of in pockets and things like that, and that actually helps you feel your body more. Compression is another great way. So on the side that they have a less sensory connection, I may use a compression sleeve, right? You can use a compression sleeve from the ankle all the way up to the thigh if you want. You could do just to the lower calf. You could use compression apparel. So there's leggings or pants that are compression, and they actually just look like fashion leggings. So there's ways that you could do it from compression or weight. There's, you know, different things like kinesiology tape, which is sensory tape. So you put it on the skin, and then it lifts the skin, and it stimulates skin stretch. So that's a way that you could do it as well. Vibration, like I said. Now, the vibration could be whole body vibration, or you can get these like a handheld massager, and it's a vibration massager. And I recommend this a lot with children, so children who have brain injuries, is I will have the parent use a hand massager, and the vibration just to the bottom of the feet, vibration to the joints and the muscles on the baby is really good. But same thing for an adult is take one and you're just vibrating the ankle joint. So just around the joint capsule, and then vibrate around the knee joint, and you're talking to the nervous system when you do that, similar to your wobble board. Of course, Neboso I would have in there, you know, use the Neboso insoles or be on the Neboso mat. And then another one is water. So doing anything in water is amazing to connecting to the nervous system and your perception of self.
Yeah. Especially when you have a couple exercises on land, exercising in the water, fabulous.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. It's also really good for the circulation. And if you're not moving as much because of an injury or decreased balance or whatnot, moving and walking is just amazing for your circulation. You just have to move to get your blood pumping, right? And the lymphatic system pumping and the vascular system. So when you're in water, it's really good to balance the fluids in the body. So that's why I also like it for people who are not as active because of an injury, is for that balance of fluids.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Yeah, because that seems to be able, when people are saying they can't exercise because of this or that, often they can do it if they're in the water.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we recommend that people go find the body of water you can walk around in. So,
so that's where a lot of the like YMCAs are great for that, and have, you know, a pool environment that you can even just sit in and do some of the body awareness exercises. So, you know, I feel like there are some ways to find a pool, or there are some physical therapy centers. I'm here in Arizona. And a lot of them will actually say that they do aquatic therapy, probably because there's space here to have a facility with a pool. Where in New York City, we did not have that. So depending on your location, yeah, you might have a physical therapist that actually does aquatic therapy.
Huh. Very interesting. So in that case, I thought of what temperature of water would you recommend that someone exercise in?
I mean, I would say a standard pool temperature, right? That if it's too cold, like, you know, when they do the polar bear plunge or whatever that is, where it's like really cold water in the winter, you don't want that. Although there are benefits, I will actually take that back. There are benefits to ice baths and cold showers for the autonomic nervous system. So you actually train a different side of the nervous system when you do cold baths and stuff like that, or cold showers. But when you're doing the actual rehab, you do want it to be a little bit more on the warmer side, because of, you know, it'll soften the joints and warm up the muscles and things like that. So, you know, one benefit to the cold is the autonomic nervous system. So the room temperature or to the warmer water would be the actual rehab. You know, you want it to lubricate the body, let's say.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So that brings me to another point. I had somebody on this, my show, We Deserve Better, a couple weeks ago, and that person was talking about letting go of control, and she was talking about the advantages of fire walking, you know, walking on the burning coals. What do you say about something like that?
You mean about the emotional side and letting go certain aspects?
No, what is it about the physical side of doing something like that to your feet?
Oh, That I've never been asked that. That's a good question. I don't know. I've actually never looked and saw, like, what is happening to these people's feet when they walk across the coals. You know, what I would definitely say is the amount of time or the actual moment that you are exposed to that heat is probably so transient. And, you know, to break it down from a scientific way, is mm-hmm. that we have two ways that we perceive pain, two different pathways. And one of it is kind of this fast-acting response, and then there's a slow response. So let's say if I stepped on a nail, right, one nerve and pathway would get me the immediate response of like, ow, and then I pull my foot. But then when I take my foot away, I can still feel it, right? I'm sure people can relate to this with anything. You kick the table, you get a delayed response and then an immediate response and a delayed response. Those are actually two different nerves and types of nerves that are communicating to the brain. What I think may be happening with the firewalking is that you're going across the coals that are hot and maybe you feel it, but then the longer acting, you get this massive adrenaline and endorphin release because of the emotional state that this is in, that is your body's natural pain reliever, that you probably don't feel it because of that. But now I'm curious and I want to go walk on fire.
Yeah, when people were telling me, I was like, "You what? Oh my goodness!" Yeah, and so I was just wondering, gee, I wonder how that relates to everything. But,
yeah.
Huh. So yeah, the endorphins obviously affect the way we feel about emotionally too.
Yes, absolutely, and the emotion side of injury recovery is very important as well, because it can affect your recovery, right? So if you have a calmness or a positivity to the outcomes of your recovery post-injury, you know, those are typically the people that do progress, because of it's just how the autonomic nervous system is affecting healing and circulation. And you know, people might not realize that if they're very anxious about their recovery and they go into a fight or flight response, that fight or flight response to your circulation and to the way that your nervous system contracts is it's very constricting. So you're actually decreasing, let's say, blood flow to certain parts of the body when you are in a fight or flight and you're anxious. So that's going to affect your recovery. Your tissue healing, things like that. I'm very much into emotional connections and mindset. It is a critical component to recovery.
So how much do you devote to that specifically?
It's a component of everything I speak about with my patients. So I would say it's a piece of the puzzle. In my practice, I deal with primarily chronic conditions. So I don't see, you know, someone who fractured their foot, let's say. That's an acute condition. I have people who have movement disorders, a lot of stroke patients, chronic tissue injury, chronic nerve entrapments in their foot, more like that. And anytime you have a chronic condition, there is a emotional component to it, where if I had two patients, or even just me and you, Thorne, and, you know, we both had the exact same idiopathic neuropathy, your interpretation of that diagnosis and how the numbness on one foot affects your day-to-day quality of life is going to be different from my perception of how my numbness on the same side of my body and foot impedes mine. You could have a totally different mindset and you don't let it control your life and consume you. Me, I become completely just embodied in it, and I am identified, and it is a part of my identity, and therefore my relationship to it is very different. So it's something I have to speak about because of how it is integrated into chronic conditions. And typically when the emotions are depressed or anxious or obsessional around it or anything that's quasi, not negative, but you get what I'm saying. It affects their experience and their ability to either recover or have a more productive quality of life because of their mindset around this chronic condition. So I will speak to many of them about somatic work, hypnotherapy, meditation, mindfulness, breath work, you know, being in the now. I mean, there's so many things that I will guide them to try to find that part of their condition.
Very interesting. So you think there's just automatically a lot of hope then when something damages one part of their body, one of their limbs or one of their sides?
I mean, you have to have hope or be hopeful or kind of have the mind shift that, okay, this is my reality, right? That,
yeah.
You know, I have, let's say I have foot drop, right? So let's say every time I'm walking because of my stroke and the type of stroke or the severity of stroke, I have foot drop on my right side. That is part of my reality now. So how do I reframe my perception of that reality? Do I just hold on to this belief that I will get the strength back to pick up my foot when maybe that's not possible, right? That's maybe just not on the table. So I try to be very real with my patients as well and say, instead of focusing on that as your goal, like I will be happy when I have the strength to pick up my foot and not have to use, let's say, an AFO. That again, is this unachievable, very far out goal. But let's instead focus on how we can, you know, improve our balance and our connection to the foot so that you feel stable when you're walking with the AFO, so that you can, you know, walk your dog or, you know, meet your best friend for coffee or something like that. Like that is a realistic goal that I try to help with that patient and say, let me get you there. That is where I want you to be versus the other. Yes, hope. You want hope, but a realistic hope.
Realistic hopes. You just focus on a small part of it. What you know you can do.
Yes,
that's good. So do you work with clients long term, or do you just take them to the next stage and somebody else takes over then?
Yeah, so I typically, so in my podiatry office, I am more of a, I'm like a director versus seeing the patient, you know, every week, doing the therapy with them and doing the exercises with them. I'm more of, let me assess and build a program for you, and then you could either do the program yourself, and I will guide you through, everything is virtual now, so through virtual means, but you have to do the work yourself, and then I will be in touch, and every 4 weeks we take you to the next level of progression of function. So I have programs that will take people through, you know, 3 month progressions and programs to get back to functional strength. But again, I'm not the one with them doing the exercises, so it's kind of a hands off. I do have a team or a referral team if people want to have me provide input to their therapist, let's say, or some recommendations. I do that as well. But, yeah, that's typically how I do it, and that's because I'm running the boat, so I'm writing, I'm teaching, I'm not traveling right now, but normally I'm traveling a bunch. And, you know, I feel that my gift or purpose, I don't know, is to be more of educating and spreading the message versus doing the message, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I, as a doctor, I consider myself more of an educator than a healer. And I think that some people know some doctors that are just healers. They love that one-on-one ability to actually change someone's life. Mine, I want to educate the healers so they can heal more people. And that's how I kind of view my medical degree.
Okay, very nice. So you work alone in your office? You said you had a team. I mean, are you the doctor who leads the team, or are there several doctors who lead the teams?
So I'm myself and my team, or my referral, I'll call them my referral network or team, is really all around the U.S., or technically all around the world. And most of my patients now I actually see virtual. So I try to guide someone's healing process from a distance by knowing who they should see in their respective city or country, let's say. And, you know, I'm a big fan of telemedicine and virtual medicine because it just opens the borders and the opportunity for people who might not have access to a subspecialty or a specialist who looks at things from a slightly different perspective, and maybe they wouldn't be able to get to that city to see them. So this now allows them to have better access. So I see a lot of people in countries that don't have formal podiatry or as sophisticated movement disorder programs, let's say. And I can watch them move and walk and give recommendations and kind of guide them as much as I can from a distance. And it works quite well when you have the family involved or someone who's committed to do the exercises themselves. So, yeah, it's something that I'm a big fan of.
Very interesting. Okay. I just want to make an announcement that if anyone is listening and has a question they'd like to ask Emily, please call the number 424-243-9540. Then after you call that number, because there's several people on here, just press 1. If you press 1, that way I'll be able to see that you, in fact, have a question. So if anyone would like to make a comment or ask a question, please call 424-243-9540. And back to you, Dr. Emily. Tell us about your book that you wrote, the author, the Barefoot Strong book.
Yes. So Barefoot Strong is a book that I wrote to really summarize everything that I practice and preach, I guess, around staying connected to our feet. And really a lot of the conversation that we were having, but in a really, it's a quick read, but it's packed read. And, you know, a lot of people have said that they're just like, wow, okay, I could read that on a flight from, you know, California to New York. I finished that book. But I got a lot of powerful tips in it. And I really go into, you know, our feet from a sensory perspective, understanding foot types, high arches, flat feet, understanding connective tissue and how our diet affects connective tissue, which is really important. The aging nervous system, or how to access the nervous system, which we spoke about, and then a lot of the foot to core references that we spoke about as well. So I think that whenever I give lectures, I tell people, like, you're hearing me say these things, but now if you read what I said in a slightly different way, it kind of solidifies a little bit more of their understanding. So it's available on Amazon, and it's, I think, $17, or it's $15 or $17. A powerful read that has lots of tips. And then outside of the book, I have a blog called Barefoot Strong Blog, and many, many, many videos on YouTube that are educational, or they're a bunch of exercises that people could do as well.
Okay. Do you recommend that a lot of people, do these exercises? They probably get something from them. Most people would.
Yeah, most people do. And again, I get feedback, so I actively am getting patients or individuals who started doing it, and then they update me via email and tell me how it's helped them so much. And, it's really feedback like that that I'm like, okay, I have to keep spreading this message because it's helping people. So I need to keep helping people.
Okay, so how can people reach you?
So I'm on social media, on Facebook, Instagram. If you just look up my name, that will most likely pull it up. So Dr. Emily Splickle. My Instagram is Dr. Emily DPM, and my Facebook would be my name that you can find me. I am my podiatry website is my name. So dremilysplickle.com, and then you can email me off of there. My Nabosa, which are the textured insoles and the mats, nabosso.com, and my email will link off of that as well. I don't hide, so you could totally find me. And then my book has a website that also links, and that's barefootstrong.com. And I often tell people that if they don't remember anything that I just said, if you just Google Dr. Emily Barefoot, you will get everything that you need to know. You will find me.
That's good. Now, I wanted to ask you some questions about the specific insoles on the website, because, a lot of different people are selling different kinds of insoles, specializing in one thing or another.
So the Nabosso insoles, for anyone who's curious and maybe hears the word insoles and then thinks of this arch support, Dr. Scholl's or something like that, that goes into your shoe, I want you to think completely different. This is a flat piece of material that has the little tiny pyramids or the texture across the entire surface. It's fully flexible and freely movable. It does not control the mechanics of the foot in any way. It is purely this sensory layer that you would put in the shoe, on your AFO, on your orthotic, and that's how we are accessing the nervous system. We have four different levels of stimulation, so from, call it low to medium to high and super high if you want. And the one that we use in neurological conditions and post-stroke and neuropathy is our gray one, which is called the neuro. So it's easy to remember, you're tapping into the nervous system or the neuro insole, which is gray.
Very interesting. Okay, so yours are a constant feedback. The entire time you're wearing them.
Yes. So when you have the insoles in your shoes or in your sandals or your slippers or whatnot, it is continuously feeding or talking to the nerves in the bottom of the feet so that you have that continuous reminder of, I feel my feet, I feel my feet, or here are my feet, or here's the ground, and that's what our insoles do. For people who may be a little skeptical, let's say, on how something so simple can have a really profound, especially, let's say, neuropathy, stroke, MS, Parkinson's, things like that, is, one, we say just try it. I can show you research studies, and you could still think that there's no way that this is going to help people feel their feet again, and then we honestly just say you have to try it. But also looking at our reviews, so reviews on Amazon and on our website, and read the people's story of what they say, and you will hear people who had stroke or have MS or have diabetes, and they say, oh my gosh, I can feel my feet again. I haven't felt my feet in 15 years. I can feel my feet, things like that. We also are doing right now a neuropathy pilot study, and we have 40 people with different types of neuropathy using our insoles and wearing them for 6 weeks. And then we assess, you know, do you have a decrease in numbness and things like that. And after the first week of wearing them for at least 30 minutes a day, 92% of those 40 individuals said that they had an increase in foot awareness, decreased foot numbness when they had the insoles on. And then 78% of those 40 said, I feel more stable when I walk because of these insoles. So it's a pilot study. It's some initial data that we're collecting, but we're doing a Parkinson's research study with Hartford Hospital in Connecticut, and we're doing an MS study with the MS Mendel Center in Connecticut as well. So a couple studies that are under IRB approval, and they're going to be initiating actually in April. And then, like I said, the pilot, look at the reviews, and then honestly, we just say, try them. You're not going to hurt yourself by trying them. You'll only potentially see this benefit.
So are they meant, there's insoles, are they meant to be worn, like, you know, all day long, or should you take them out and give your feet a break?
It depends on the individual. So we have some people that will wear them for 30 minutes a day. However, if you have neuropathy or you have foot drop or something like that where it's a little bit higher level impacting your gait, then you really do want to wear them all day. And if you are wearing them every day, then we say you want to alternate the different types of insoles that we have. So maybe Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I wear the gray one. And then Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, I wear the blue one, right? Because they're slightly different levels of stimulation. And we want to keep the brain guessing and sensitive to what is happening. And that's why we say alternate it if you are wearing them every day.
Okay. So like an exercise routine, you're told not to do the same thing because the body gets used to it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Hmm. So if you keep changing them, then the body doesn't know what to expect and gets some benefit. Okay. Very interesting. Okay. So what would you recommend then for somebody who, for example, like my case, someone who's, you know, lost a good deal of their vestibular coordination.
So this is where we go back to the four main input systems on how we control balance or orientate ourselves in gravity. You have eyes, vestibular system, right? So the inner ear, your joints, which are the proprioceptors. That was the gravity and the weighted vest that I was talking about. And then mechanoceptors are tactile. So if you take away one of those, the nervous system upregulates the other ones. So in the case of having a vestibular issue or vestibular imbalances and things like that, is you want to upregulate the other input systems. So could you enhance your proprioceptive system through the weighted vest and the compression and the apparel that is providing some sort of stimulus to the proprioceptive system or the joint? Or do you upregulate tactile, where the Neboso insoles? It's kind of hard to upregulate vision, right? But what's really, really interesting is that the system that people become very reliant on when you take away tactile or proprioceptive, so let's say you have neuropathy, is they become very, very visually dominant. And we work with many physical therapists that specialize in balance disorders. And I remember speaking to one of the facilities, and they were telling us a story about a patient that was so visually dominant that he was walking home and it was hitting dusk, and then you kind of didn't get home fast enough and it was dark. And the fact that it became dark outside completely threw off his ability to maintain balance, because it just downregulated or took away some of his visual input that he was so reliant on because of his neuropathy. And he was so thrown off that he had to crawl home so that he could feel the ground and be lower within gravity. So that's an example of how you don't want to be too dependent on one system, or if you are, you better be prepared if one of those systems gets taken away.
Yeah. Very interesting. Yeah, because they talk about how kids in school are different kinds of learners. It's important to, you know, have a program that does a little bit of each to cater to some of those other people who learn differently.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. You really want to train all. And this is another part of why I'm such an advocate of barefoot rehab and barefoot stimulation and, texture stimulation and things like that, is let's say if you sprain your ankle, just as an example, most physical therapists will go on a wobble board and do instability training, and they're really training one input system, which is the proprioceptive. I'm much more of an advocate of saying, no, you need to train all of them as part of this. So as you're training the instability of the proprioceptors on a wobble board, how are you tying in vision? How are you tying in vestibular? Are they barefoot? Are they on the Neboso, on the wobble board? So that you can bring in all of those systems versus just thinking of it as this non-integrated system, which is not how it works. Everything is integrated.
Very interesting. Very interesting, because, yeah, I know, like, people who have problems hearing, for example, really depend much more on their eyes. People whose eyes aren't real good are much more dependent on their ears. So you kind of make use of whatever systems you have.
Yep. And that, again, is what we were saying, that really the goal of the nervous system, or its primary concern, is survival, right? So it's going to find a way. And that's this upregulation of the other input systems, is if I can't see as well, my orientation and perception and survival is based off of me being able to hear more or be more sensitive with touch. You know, blind individuals are very sensitive in their touch. Their tactile sensitivity is very high, where someone who has good visual input probably has less sensitivity or acuity. So it's called acuity. So your tactile acuity would probably be lower than someone who is blind.
Okay. So, yeah, it's what I believe. Just make use of whatever you have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you can get it all to work together, but you think the feet are the actual gateway into the whole nervous system. Do you think as long as you've got them and you can use them, then use them, make them the best they can be, right?
Yes, and it's often a overlooked access point, which is why I also, you know, really promote it, because it's one that people are like, oh, right, okay, I didn't think to train my feet. And then when they do, they see that powerful response. And that even outside of just sensory or post-neurological injury or anything like that, a majority of people don't think about their feet. Because they're always in shoes and they're just kind of underappreciated from like a societal perspective. So a lot of my work is to get even, you know, young, healthy individuals to think about their feet.
Yeah, that's interesting, because my feet are something I've never really thought about. You know, I was too worried about my lack of being able to see, pretty much. I mean, yeah, I can see, but not real well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just very interesting. Your feet are where a lot of it happens.
Yeah, and our feet are reading the ground. So just as important as vision is to what we do, you know, you have to read the ground. So, and that's your feet that do that. And that's why there's so many nerves in the bottom of the feet, and why the stimulation of the feet is really important to how you start to shape the brain. Also, when you look at children with brain injuries, but also newborn babies, massage is huge. When I had my daughter, everything that I did was about starting to build her body awareness. So I would give her, you know, little baby massages every day so that she could start to feel and connect. And when you look at the research, when you massage the feet of a baby, they show different parts of the brain activating and lighting up. And, you know, very, very unique showing like, yes, foot connection, really important to foundational nervous system development.
Very interesting. Okay, it looks like we have a question here. I'm calling on the person from 215. I've just turned on your mic. That's what? That's Pennsylvania.
Hello.
Yes?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you fine. What's up?
Okay, you're kind of breaking up. This is Ronald Kretz. I have a question for Dr. Emily, and thank you for taking my call.
Okay.
Is there anything we can do for neuropathy in the foot after a subarachnoid hemorrhage?
So I don't know if you heard some of the tips that I had given, but
I think,
depending
yeah,
on
I
when...
Yeah, I think I missed some of them.
Not a problem.
Okay,
I always keep them because some of the listeners maybe didn't hear when I had said it, depending when they tuned in. So
right.
when there's neuropathy, and this is regardless of the type of neuropathy, so... if it is diabetic or medication-related or autoimmune, or in your case, you said a brain hemorrhage. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes. Um, So
yeah.
We are looking at what can we do to turn the noise up to the stimuli and the different stimuli that the feet are sensitive to. So you are looking at texture. For texture, I use the Nabosso insoles, which are very specific. It's a specific type of texture to stimulate a specific nerve in the bottom of the feet. So that's one, Nabosso insoles. Second,
oh, wow,
is I would do massage to the bottom of the foot. Now, that could be you massaging your own foot where you just kind of prop it up and use your thumbs to massage the foot. Or you could use a roller or a lacrosse ball on the bottom of the foot somehow. But there's some great research showing that 5 minutes of a foot massage can increase the sensory perception of the foot. So that's something else that I would do. Incorporating foot strengthening exercises, because even though you might not feel the foot contracting, the muscles of the feet are contracting, and you're helping with circulation and stimulation, and the muscles of the feet connect to the muscles of your core and your hip, which are necessary for standing. The way that we can balance when we walk is because of our glutes and our hip muscles. So you can get your foot connected to those to improve your balance despite having neuropathy. And then using vibration. So whole body vibration is whole body vibration platforms. But you can also get hand massagers that you can bring that vibration to the nerves in the bottom of the foot. I'm a huge fan of dry brushing. So you dry brush and get the nerves and the lymphatic system stimulated. So those would be my top four tips for neuropathy, and that's regardless of the type of neuropathy.
Wow. When you say vibration, is that that big machine that kind of wraps around you?
No. So there's a platform. The company is called PowerPlate. It is a company I work with PowerPlate. So if you go to powerplate.com, you will see exactly the platform that I'm referencing. Now, they are the small one for individual use is around $1,500 to $1,800. So it's an investment, right? If you don't want to use that, that's where you could use kind of a hand massager and use it to the bottom of the foot, into the joint. You can get those for probably $20 on Amazon and still bring that into the nervous system.
Well, that's interesting and hopeful. Yeah. When you were talking about the hot coals, it reminded me of my deck. And in the summertime, it gets like, I don't know, 130 degrees, and you can hardly stand walking on it.
I would not use that as therapy.
Okay. I can't stand it.
Yeah, no. And one of the first nerve stimuli that can be injured in neuropathy or numbness in feet is temperature. So what you think is hot might actually be hotter. And I've had some patients come in like scalded because of their neuropathy. Yeah. So.
Kind of makes my brain do a backflip, like in the same way if you turn all the lights out and you're walking, and I actually can see like a fuzzy, I don't really know what you would call it, but it's kind of like the fuzz on a TV when they used to go blank in the middle of the night, like a fuzzy screen, and kind of like orange, and sometimes I see little colored lights.
Yeah, then I would probably not do that.
No, that's not good either. Okay, well, I will check out all you said, and also I can catch the first part on the archive. But thank you
Absolutely.
For taking my call.
You are so welcome.
Thank you.
Okay. Good night now. Bye-bye.
Okay, well, that's somebody who wanted some practical advice. For his particular situation. Well, it sounds like you were able to help him. He's going to go to your website and look that up.
Yeah, and... You know, for those that do have any questions, I definitely say do reach out. I make myself available for answering questions. You know, I do the virtual consultations. I can guide you to which insole might be appropriate or, you know, which compression apparel or which wrist weight and things like that. So it is an option for people as well to reach out.
Sounds great. Yeah, and I guess reminds me, I heard recently that soaking your feet is a very good thing to be doing. We were kind of talking about that a little bit, walking in water, but I just remembered, yeah, I've heard that. So, I mean, someone gave me some bath salts, so I found a little, dish then you wash dishes, and I kind of put my feet in that, and I must admit, it did feel pretty good.
So what is really nice about what you're explaining is, so you're using Epsom salt, or it's a magnesium, and the magnesium from the Epsom salt is very good for muscle soreness. It balances out electrolytes. It's really good for sleep. So magnesium for musculoskeletal or muscle recovery, muscle pain, foot pain is really good. And that's what the soaking is. So, yes, there's warm water, which is good for, you know, vasodilation and bringing circulation. But a lot of the benefit around foot soaks and Epsom salt is the magnesium. And I swear it by magnesium baths. I'm also a huge proponent on hydrogen peroxide baths. It's just a really good way to increase, you know, oxygenation or electrolytes, muscle recovery, circulation. So I'm very much into that as well.
So things can feel good and be good for you. That's wonderful to hear.
Exactly.
Well, very, very nice. Okay, so again, talk a little bit about your website. What is your website? People can get on there and figure out and buy the technology, the insoles and things?
Yes. So if you go to naboso.com, again, NABOSO.com, this is where you can get the textured insoles that we've been speaking about. We have, again, the four different levels. The one that I would recommend, just based off of our conversation, would be the Nero, which is the gray. And then all of the insoles, they come in four sizes. They fit a range of sizes. And you can cut them. So if you are, you know, let's say a women's size 8, you would get the medium, and it's going to be a little bit bigger. So you trace an insole on the Naboso insole, and then you cut the extra material and then put it into your shoe. You will not damage the Naboso insoles by cutting them. And then we also have mats. And the mats have the same textural design. We use the same material, but they have different hardnesses to vary the level of stimulation. And a lot of people will use our mats for when they do their balance exercises or their therapy or rehab. And some people will put it we have a small standing mat that's 2 foot by 2 foot. Some people will put that in their bathroom, in their kitchen, outside their bed. And it's a way that they like to bring and kind of wake up the feet when they're standing in one place, so when they first wake up in the morning. And then we have a neuro ball, which so it's a blue ball that splits into two domes, and you can release your feet on it. You could even do it seated and just put your feet on it and kind of roll the feet on the top of these two domes. And that's a great way to massage the muscles, release the muscles, and then stimulate the nervous system as well.
Very interesting. Yeah. Okay. So do you have any, on your website, do you have any specific socks or just the insoles and the mats?
Yes. Yep, so right now we have just the insoles, mats, and flooring, but we are actually releasing a sock in 2021, so stay tuned. We did a blog recently about the socks that we recommend to wear with our insoles, and we are looking to sell socks, so thin socks. You want the sock to be as thin as possible, and the thin sock will then help you still feel the texture, even though you have socks on. But we have a sock that we're working on that's going to bring the texture into the inside of the sock. And that's what we're working on right now.
Very interesting. Yeah, you just had to happen to ask you because I was thinking, yeah, they're selling socks now, along with different, you know, shoe supports and sneakers and things. So I was just curious if you guys had any socks, but that's great. You're coming up with them so you can wear them to get support. Okay. And feel where your feet are.
Mm-hmm.
And you think that most people are actually can be helped by this technology then?
Yeah, I mean, based off of the fact that everyone, regardless of age, activity, or injury history, needs to access the feet, just based on foundational concepts. Now, because of the specificity of our texture, this is where we see the results. So there's actually 2 years of research that went into developing the material that we used and the pattern of the texture and the hardness or lack of hardness of the insoles. So it's really dialed in to see the results that we do. And, you know, again, I like to consider it noise, and we're just turning up the noise that's coming into the feet. And a lot of people benefit from that, especially when you have decreased sensitivity to noise, let's say neuropathy. If we turn the noise up, you can hear it again, and then that means you can feel your feet.
Mm-hmm. So do you ever recommend people with a one-sided problem, just the insole just on the one side, or you recommend people wear them on both sides?
No, definitely on both sides. And part of that reason is because of what we discussed earlier, that if you stimulate the more sensitive side, you get this contralateral benefit. So if I wear it in my left and I have numbness in my right, do I get a transfer? Yes, the research does demonstrate that. But if I wear it in the one that I have numbness, I actually feel it more. So we always say to do both feet.
Okay, that's smart. And do you feel that you can influence the feet by working on the hands, for example?
That's a good question. I don't know. I would have to look at the research on that. However, as a benefit or an aside, is that we do have people that will use the Nabosso material and product for increasing hand stimulation, with an example being that when someone has tremors, that they saw that the tremors in the hand would actually decrease when they used the Nabosso stimulation to it. So that's a way that we could kind of think about the hand connection and the hand nerves and how they relate to the foot nerves, is that it responds to similar texture.
It's very interesting because I've never really thought about my feet all that much, one way or another. So now I'm just thinking up all these questions and things.
I mean, yeah, people neglect the hands almost just as much as the feet. So, you know, releasing the hands is really important, similarly in the way that our feet.
Yeah. To me, my husband and I are chiropractors specifically concerned about what happens up top. And here you are talking about what happens to the bottom and how important that is. And it's like, yeah. It is pretty important.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we don't have much time left, but I don't know, why don't you tell us some real success cases you've had or you've seen?
We're doing this neuropathy pilot that I had referenced, and it's varying types of neuropathy, including MS, chemo-related, diabetic, small nerve, autoimmune, idiopathic, medication, so various ones. And one of the participants has MS-related, and her doctor had said, you know, you really should start mentally getting ready to be, you know, in a wheelchair one day and things like that. And she wore the insoles just for a week, and she emailed us and was like, whose body do I have? Like, I've never moved like this. Like, it's, she was just, like, dumbfounded on how well that it had worked. And, of course, she tells her doctor, and they're like, I'm shocked. And they're just like, I don't know. I don't know what to say. But she's like, no, trust me. Like, you can see me move. Watch me walk. We're actually doing sharing her story on our blog and on our website because of kind of that dramatic difference that we saw with her. We have some videos on our YouTube channel. There was this one woman, she was a doctor in Mexico, and she was diagnosed with Parkinson's and for the past 10 years. And then she reached the point this last several years that the Parkinson's progressed so much, the tremor in the hand just progressed so much that she had to leave medicine. And when I didn't see her, but one of our therapists saw her and gave her Nabosso insoles. And before she was using the insoles, she had this very tiptoey gait and was very kind of on the ball of her feet and just kind of everything was contracted. And then she used the Nabosso insoles and then started walking more heel-toe and kind of had this. And then after wearing the insoles for a day and kind of reconnecting to her nervous system, that next day the therapist saw her again and she had the insoles in. And she literally started running. And this woman has not run in 10 years. Like, she literally was crying on the video. It's on our YouTube.
Wow.
And
nice.
So stories like that I love. And I try to use those. Obviously, I founded Nabosso, so I'm trying to – it's a product company. I want to sell products. But really what – the underlying message of any stories that I give is to really have people understand the power of the feet from a sensory perspective. That's what I want all of these stories to be. That's what I want people who use Nabosso to not be like, oh, yes, this is the best insole. I want them to say, this is demonstrating the power of the skin in the bottom of the feet. That's really why I started Neboso, is to just demonstrate and help people access those nerves and appreciate those nerves because of how powerful they are. And, you know, so those are two stories.
That's wonderful. Well, it looks like there's another question here. I think it's from the same caller who was on here before. I'm turning you on, okay?
Yes. Hi, it's me again. Sorry.
Are you again?
Yeah, I was wondering if Dr. ever heard of grounding, where you walk barefoot on the ground.
Yes.
And it gives you energy.
Yes.
That
Let's talk about
actually
grounding.
Works, I'm quite sure.
Yes. So.
I think there's something to that.
Yes.
Once I slept on a beach and probably had pretty much bare skin, it was summertime, and when I woke up, I was completely energized like never before, and I started jogging, and I could just run forever. It was amazing. It was like Forrest Gump or something. I just ran and ran and ran, and I never liked running before, but this was great. I was just, it was like being a child again, you know. You could just run forever. No pain.
Yeah, so grounding, for any of the listeners who have not heard of it, is how you're connecting to the energy field and the rhythms of the planet, like Earth, right, natural Earth, because it's also called earthing. So now the Earth has a negative charge. So you can think of this like magnets. So the Earth is a negative magnet, and our body, when we get exposed to inflammation and free radicals and oxidative stress, or even EMS and 5G that's on our cell phones and all that stuff, is positive, the positive charges. Or you could think of them as acidic. So when you ground and you're on the earth and you connect to that negative or that opposite charge, it can balance out a lot of this acidity and free radicals and oxidative stress in our body, which is how we age, and some of that stasis and resistance. From a energy perspective, is you find the rhythm. So there's circadian rhythm. Obviously, you know what circadian rhythm is. That's how we, you know, wake and sleep cycles. But that you get connected to the earth. There's a lot of research around earthing or grounding, around anti-aging, circulation health, the sleep patterns, different hormone release in the body, autonomic nervous systems. There's a lot of great stuff. So I'm not surprised that happened to you. I ground every day. When I walk my dog or I take him out, I make a point of taking my shoes off and standing on the grass. And, yeah, it's very easy to do. I tell people to do 15 minutes a day, just be on the dirt or earth for 15 minutes a day barefoot, and you're technically grounded.
That's
don't stand on your hot deck, but standing on the ground.
Yeah, no, not on the hot deck, but on the grass. Yeah.
Yeah, we all know what, you know, the warm sand feels like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's definitely something to that. That's really interesting. Okay, I can't wait to do it. It's nighttime here now, so that's out.
Yeah.
And it's freezing.
Freezing.
Yeah.
But it's
freezing here in Pennsylvania.
They also have grounding blankets as well.
Oh.
So you could technically ground now without being outside on the earth. That they have grounding blankets and grounding mattress pads and things like that. And if you go online and search grounding blankets, you will find lots of information. But that's a way that if you live in or you're around a high EMF, so think of all the internet wireless things that are out there, it neutralizes a lot of those EMFs, which... You know, we don't have to turn this into a conversation around EMF, but I'm very anti-EMF because of how it affects the nervous system and the rhythms within our body. So I that's partly why I ground, but I also have a grounding blanket as well. And, you know, they have grounding dog beds, so animals can also ground and stuff like that.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Very interesting. Very good. What was I going to say?
I don't know. What were you going to say?
I don't know, Darren.
Well, you can write to Dr. Emily about it.
Yeah. I need grounding, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's very interesting. I will look into it, and I'm dialed into your website so I can find you again, and I look forward to it.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, and good night again. Take care.
Yeah. Thank you for participating.
What did you say?
I said, thank you for participating in our show tonight.
Oh, okay. Thank you for taking my call. And I will get back to you. I'm going to try this stuff, and I'll get back to you. And I'm taking notes here.
Good. Perfect.
Taking names. Okay. All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, well, that was pleasant. Someone who's very interested. Yes, grounding is a good thing to be doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I didn't know they sold grounding blankets. I mean, what a great idea. Whoever thought of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's actually natural elements that ground. Like copper and silver and kind of elements that are actually woven into the fabric. So some of these grounding blankets actually have minerals that are woven into the fibers, and that's where the grounding comes in.
Wow. Pretty neat. Okay. Well, it's about 10 minutes left in the show here. So, Dr. Emily, do you have any final words you'd like to say?
Yeah, I mean, one, I wanted to thank you and all of the listeners, and I hope that it piqued some curiosity. I mean, that's the first step, is be curious about your feet and start to explore some of these recommendations or aspects that I went over. And, you know, they're very, very accessible. And when people are a little bit skeptic or they might not understand it, that's why I say just try it. Try it and listen to your body, and it will tell you it naturally gravitates to what it likes, and you might be surprised that you just like being more barefoot.
I've always been scared because it always, I step on something and it hurts. So that's why I don't like going barefoot all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's where. Yes, you don't want to think of it as like, oh, just you have to be barefoot everywhere. But if you just start by releasing your feet for 5 minutes in the morning, that's in the direction that I want people to go. Or, you look at the Nabosto products, or you do 30 minutes of just being barefoot around your home so that you bring in that sensory stimulation. So it can be kind of trickled in or just kind of peppered within your life, but in a really effective way. Without, you don't have to drink the Kool-Aid and outside. We don't have to go that far. But there are ways to be what I call quote unquote barefoot strong. That's why I wrote my book called Barefoot Strong. That are not barefoot lifestyle. To me, to be barefoot strong means you respect the foot from a sensory perspective. You're thinking about the power of the foot, and doing things to keep your feet healthy on a daily basis. That's what it means to be barefoot strong in my definition.
Mm-hmm. So you want to lead people to the barefoot strong paradigm then?
Yes.
And you think everyone's capable of it?
Absolutely. Everyone's capable of it.
Okay. Well, I've heard I should go barefoot more. Maybe I should try it. Like you said, first around the house. You know.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, I can take my shoes off right now while I'm listening to this last few minutes. But I wanted to thank you very much. You've given me some great information. You've given me and all the listeners tonight some great information about the feet and foot alignment. You know, like things that I don't think about very often but are so relevant to our way of life and our way of being.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Okay. Good night, Dr. Emily, and thank you very much.
Of course. Thank you and good night to everyone.